Andrew Rossi, good to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
We should probably stipulate right at the outset that college tuition is way more expensive than it used to be, way more expensive than anybody ever thought it probably would be. And yet there is still the drive in this country to send so many people to college. How is that tenable? How is that sustainable?
Well, you know, the truth is that higher education is still an engine of social mobility, even as it has grown so expensive. So we see in the film that those who have a college degree, a BA, actually make in their median lifetime earnings about $1 million more than those who only have a high school diploma. And that's a really powerful statistic that helps to drive the continued demand. However, there are a lot of other mitigating factors like student loan debt and poor completion rates that complicate the question of whether college is still worth it.
Okay, so let's play that out a little bit. If you had and I have no idea whether you have children or not, but if you have a 15 or 16-year-old child who's a junior in high school now, what are you telling them about whether or not college is worth it? Assuming they're going to have to go into debt and assuming that, you know, all of these things that are out in that film are true.
Sure. Well, I think that this is really a moment with tuition so expensive that parents and their children need to sit around the dinner table or in the living room, wherever it may be, driving in the car, have an intimate moment to really explore with their son or daughter what it is that they hope to achieve in their lives, so that sort of bridge between adolescence and adulthood can be one that is fulfilling, in which they discover what they want to do, but don't emerge with this paralyzing burden of debt. And so the school that the young person goes to, if they choose to actually go to college, should not be determined based on the fanciest student center, the biggest stadium, the football team that the young person maybe wants to follow, but rather a sense of what the employability is from a given school, is studying a given discipline, what the average student debt burden is, and also whether, on average, students in that school complete and finish and get that degree. Because if you don't get it, it's not going to be worth it.
You know, that all makes total sense. And you're not in college to have a rock climbing wall in your student center, and I get that. But at the same time, proponents of a broadly based liberal education in this country say, this is what we need to do to survive. This is what we have to do to get people to come here so that we can give them these tools, not the rock climbing tools and skills, but the critical thinking skills, but the ability to reason your way through a complicated society. How do you match those two up? That arms race of it's a business with the nobler mission of curating somebody's mind.
Unfortunately, what we find in the film is that a lot of that party line that's coming from certain institutions is false. So a lot of the expense has gone to administrations, which have ballooned since 1978 at a rate of 240%, while faculty instruction and the cost thereto has only increased by 40%. There are many projects on campuses that are being done and require the schools to actually go into debt that have no relation to the academic rigor of the institution or indeed any academic activity at all. In fact, one of the most spectacular examples of this financial mismanagement and sort of really falling down on the mission is at Cooper Union here in New York City.
Which we should say has been tuition free for 150, 80 something years, right? That was the founding grant by Peter Cooper that it would be tuition free.
Precisely. So it's had this mission to be free for all, and now they are thinking that they're going to have to start charging tuition because they took out a $175 million loan to build a new building across the street from their original one at a cost of $1,000 a square foot, which is more than a luxury hotel. And clearly, this school, which is only 1,000 students and has its mission to be free, does not need such an expensive Starkitect building. But it's completely representative of a broader trend that we see in the film in higher education.
What are we supposed to do about this?
You know, there are a lot of very important legislative initiatives on the federal and state levels. So, for example, this week we've seen President Obama say that he wants to expand the amount of students who can benefit from an income payment plan for their loans, which would allow for them to pay only 10% of their income to pay back those loans. And Elizabeth Warren, of course, has been a leading voice, and this week had legislation which unfortunately didn't make it through the Senate. And that, in a way, sort of pivots to the bigger question, which is how do we overhaul the entire higher education system and sort of, you know, to use that cliche, put the genie back in the bottle. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it would require the kind of broad and grand legislative initiatives that we've seen in America's history, like the Morrill Act, which created the land-grant universities in the 1860s, or the GI Bill that FDR was able to propose, and Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, which actually, with the Higher Education Act of 1965, created student loans to begin with. Mm. But it's clear that the political climate today in this country would not support that level of legislative initiative. So we're going to have to sort of on the margins provide relief to those who have student debt and hopefully start a bigger conversation. And that's where we hope that Ivory Tower can step in and sort of present this problem to parents and to students and to stakeholders in higher education and say, look, we don't have the exact solution here, but if we put our heads together and we are aware of this problem, maybe we can reform slowly but surely.
We have in this country a track record, a long track record of success and innovation in higher education. But you say, or you interview a guy early in this film who says this about it. His name is Clayton Christensen, and his book is called The Innovator's Dilemma. I'm sure a lot of people know it. Here's what he said about that.
Higher education in America has been very successful for centuries. But now things are changing because the scale and the cost is enormous. We have a product that is so expensive that a lot of people can't pay for it and they have to go into debt, and it just isn't viable.
Setting aside for just a second the scary music, his point is not wrong. His point is that we can't do this anymore.
That's right. I think Clayton Christensen has a very fascinating take on how the four-year residential model for students is part of the gold standard of education. Mm-hmm. It's part of the DNA of growing bigger and better. And for schools like Harvard, where Christensen teaches, which have huge endowments, $32 billion, for example, at Harvard, yeah. That's okay. They can build and create better facilities while still providing financial aid that in many cases is full need for those who qualify with their family's income.
Full need, that is to say, you know, nothing out of pocket for the kid and his family.
Precisely.
His family. Yeah.
Exactly. And we follow a student, David Boone, who used to be homeless, who's now
kid, yeah.
at Harvard. But unfortunately, the majority of other schools that are sort of chasing this same business model and want to get higher in the rankings of prestige, they don't have that endowment, and so they're passing on the cost to the student.
What do you make of the idea that we need to, and the president has talked about this, he wants to do this, we need to rate colleges. We need to rate them on, you know, tuition and graduation rates and all the rest, and then also on what kind of jobs students get when they get out, so that, you know, what you're buying here, and it's a product, right? What you're buying is something you're getting your money's worth on.
Absolutely. In principle, I absolutely support the idea of changing the conversation so that the metrics that people are using to evaluate a school that they might want to attend are based on those exact things that President Obama and Arne Duncan are proposing: employability, completion rates, amount of student debt. I think that there is a lot of skepticism about creating yet another ranking, which, when it's sort of packaged in that way, can easily be gamed and manipulated or abused, in fact. So I think that there's a healthy amount of reticence to actually, you know, follow through with a whole new set of rankings. But I think putting the focus on those metrics is a good one. Although there is also a danger in terms of looking at employability in a way that might prejudice certain forms of study that we think, well, you know, it's unlikely you're going to get a job that's going to pay you very much if you study that particular humanities course or whatnot. I think that
devalues that course of study in society, which is not what we want to do, right?
Precisely.
Yeah. You know, that brings up a related issue, and you touch on this sort of tangentially in the film. You don't directly address it. The idea of, are these kids students or are they consumers and customers? Because that's a tricky thing, right?
Absolutely. I think that's a really fundamental point of the film, that increasingly institutions are treating the students as customers, and their parents as well feel that because they are paying so much money, because the bill is in some cases $60,000, that when they get on campus, they're entitled to almost customer service. And unfortunately, we see that bleeds into the classroom, too, to create perverse incentives.
Right. Well, I mean, look at the news this week. David Bratt, who beat Eric Cantor, the first thing people did was go to ratemyprofessor.com and look up his scores.
Exactly. It's phenomenal that this online forum has now become such a driver in professors' behavior and is not just a niche thing. I mean, everyone can access reviews of professors. And unfortunately, we see from a study called Academically Adrift, which is featured in the film, that professors in some cases are responding to that. And the classroom has become a sort of theater for favors that are being exchanged from the student to the professor. And what I mean by that is, in some cases, the professor sort of agrees to not create too challenging of a curriculum for the student. And then the student agrees not to be too demanding of the teacher's time so that the teacher can actually spend their time doing research and publishing in order to accrue prestige to the university and to their own tenure.
This shift from student to consumer, when did that happen? I mean, can you pinpoint it?
Well, what we see in the film is that in the late 60s and 70s, higher education came to be seen as a private good rather than a public good. Notwithstanding this trajectory of higher ed as, this idea that it's creating a democracy of educated people who can decide for themselves what kind of society they want to have, and government sort of intervening again with the Morrill Act to create land-grant universities, the GI Bill, and the Higher Education Act of 1965. Rather, conservative governors at that time, like Ronald Reagan, for example, claimed that the government or the state should not be involved in subsidizing intellectual curiosity. And so at that point, you see a pivot toward not subsidizing or supporting state universities through direct funding, but rather decreasing funding and growing the student loan industry. And at that point, institutions realize, well, I'm not getting money anymore from the state, so I've got to get it from the student. And so this competition emerges in which schools are trying to attract the student loan dollar. Mm-hmm. And the marketing of the importance of higher education also starts to change at that time. It becomes more utilitarian and about a private good. If you come to our university and you get your degree, you'll make that extra $1 million over the course of your life. And so it's at that point that it becomes much harder for people to view higher education as something that's about moral uplift. It's about discovering yourself and something that benefits the society as a whole. Rather, it seems to be a sort of private, selfish thing that you can do if you choose to do it and want to make more money.
Is it fair to say that higher education in this country has become corporatized a little bit?
I think so, and I think that's what many of the folks that we speak to in the film believe, that in an effort to compensate for a reduction in state funding, in an effort to bring students and their student loan dollars to their campuses, many institutions are behaving like big businesses rather than treating their students as pupils. And this has gotten us to a point where tuition is rising at a rate of 1,120% since 1978.
Mm-hmm. What are we supposed to do then, Andrew? I mean, we've got lots of needs in this country. We've got infrastructure problems. We've got health care that's expensive. We've got an aging population. How do you prioritize everything and give everything its due? Because you can't do that.
I believe that students themselves are a key cohort that can actually affect a lot of change. And I think that's one of the fascinating things that we see in that story of Cooper Union. Again, Victoria Sobel, who's the head of the student group that is protesting the institution of tuition at Cooper Union. I was extremely inspired by the level of commitment and passion that these students have. And I think that if they make their concerns known to administrations, that would be very helpful. And then when they graduate, they can advocate on the state level. One of the things we're doing with this film, Ivory Tower, is to have a social action campaign, which Participant Media is coordinating. They're the folks behind Food Inc. and Waiting for Superman and An Inconvenient Truth. So I think as more people understand the depth of this problem, more will be done.
I totally get your point, but it's worth me mentioning that even after the student protests at Cooper Union, the Board of Trustees and the president still voted to charge tuition in January of this year. I mean, they're still... You got to pay the bills. As Milton Friedman says, free, and he says this in your film, free is the most misused word in the American language. Nothing's free.
That's right. But the reason why they're going to have to, or they believe that they have to charge, is because of their own negligence, according to a lawsuit which the students of Cooper Union have brought against the administration. And as part of that lawsuit, they are seeking for that decision to charge tuition to be reversed. So the jury is still out. Things can change over there. And it's important to note that, you know, Cooper Union and those students are not asking to be free, to get a free ride. Rather, they're asking for the endowment, which includes the land under the Chrysler Building, asking for that endowment to be properly managed as it has been through two world wars and a Great Depression for the last 150 years, rather than subject to this cost disease that is overtaking some institutions in higher ed.
Cost disease, that's an interesting phrase.
That's actually how Clayton Christensen describes it, as a sort of spiral of behavior in which institutions are competing with one another in an effort that they believe is to become better and bigger, but it's taking on a sort of viral nature and actually causing harm.
Who's doing it right out there? Who do you like?
Well, I think we see in the film a program called Deep Springs that is phenomenal, and everyone who's seen the film, or not everyone, but several people have commented how it's very inspiring. It's located on a desert in Death Valley. It only has 26 students, all of whom are male, which is a sort of quirk of the trust that was created in 1917 to found the school. But the students actually govern themselves. They work on the ranch. Where the school is located, they choose their classes, they choose their professors, and it's amazing how inspired the students can be when they're given that control, that agency, that responsibility, rather than being treated as consumers who all they want to do would be to, you know, sit in a hot tub or something. So I think that school is really remarkable. Also, Spelman College, which is a historically black college in Atlanta, all for women. It was formed about 20 years after the end of slavery. And the students we see there talk about how they're able to discuss issues regarding race and gender and identity, as well as developing skills to pursue business or law when they graduate. So it's that perfect fusion of character formation and also job readiness that we hope college can provide. So I think there are definitely other institutions that are doing it right.
Is it possible to pick one part of the higher education dilemma in this country? Can you pick one thing, from rising student debt loads to the corporatization of American education to the arms race from schools that have to have bigger and nicer facilities to administration faculties? Can you pick one thing and say, if we could solve this, it would be the Holy Grail?
Well, I think if you picked tuition rates themselves, if it were possible to somehow motivate the institutions, the schools themselves, to lower their tuition rates, I think that would have a profound effect, even to the extent that many of them say, well, our sticker price is X amount of dollars, but what we actually charge people frequently is less than that.
It's like buying a car.
It's right, but this significance of the sticker price is still influencing parents and students to behave like consumers, and it has led to this broad sort of inflation of cost. But I think the thing that Ivory Tower is trying to do is to look at many different sociological studies, present a sort of a broad range of data so that people understand the problem, not in a vacuum of one set of sort of assumptions, but rather as a whole organic question that includes a historical context of, you know, how the first university was founded in this country, how historically higher ed has evolved, and now all the sort of things that are going on to complicate that original mission.
You got the president of Harvard, the president of the University of Virginia, the president of Wesleyan, I think. I mean, you had a bunch of administrators out there sit down with you. I'm wondering what they said when you asked them why tuition is so doggone high.
Well, President Roth of Wesleyan agrees that this idea that tuition is $60,000 for schools of his tier is astronomical and troubling. And in fact, he has agreed to cap tuition at Wesleyan and peg it to the rate of inflation. Hmm. So he is one of those administrators that understands that that this is an unsustainable financial model, and even has.
I bet they all understand it's unsustainable, right? They're not doing anything about it.
Well, it's a complicated thing because if you look at schools like Stanford and Harvard, because of their endowments, they're able to pursue these building initiatives, but also offer incredible financial aid.
Right.
So for them, it's actually working.
Yeah, but Eastern Iowa State, just to pick one, which is possibly a made-up school, can't afford to do that.
That's correct, and that's why we see the problems in the
right.
film and the cost being shifted to the student.
Rising student debt loads, over $1 trillion, as has been widely reported, are and have been said to be the next big economic bubble that's going to happen in this country, right? That's the next big thing that's going to send us over the economic cliff. What happens if we don't fix it? What happens if we don't get the higher education puzzle right?
Well, one of the most devastating consequences would be a sort of macroeconomic one, which is that when young people are saddled with that kind of burden, they decide not to form a family, not to buy a house, not to buy a car. It's not just about a constriction of life choices in terms of career and happiness, but it has broader macroeconomic effects on the country. I think that's something that President Obama was discussing when he made his executive action this week, and that's one of the key problems.
Andrew Rossi is the producer and director of a new documentary about higher education in this country. It is called Ivory Tower. Andrew, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.